Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by Terzo, an authentic upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. Today's guest is John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, it's turned out to be an eventful weekend for the San Francisco Giants, even though they're not headed to the postseason and they might be headed for 100 losses. It's still in play here as we do this podcast, but it really is going to be a wonderful celebration of a career on Saturday when Matt Cain takes the mound for the final time. He's going to retire. He just made that announcement the other day. And, you know, this guy was such a special player in Giants history, not just because of the numbers, because obviously, you know, he put up, as far as starts go, he was taking the mound as much as anybody, you know, up there among the great pitchers in Giants history. But, you know, he came through so big in the clutch in the postseason for San Francisco starting in 2010. And he's just been around for a long time. It's just hard to imagine Matt Cain not pitching for the Giants anymore.
You're right, and the timing is right on many levels. He's at the end of his contract. He's obviously not good enough to go over 32 starts and 200 innings as he did over and over in the prime of his career. And he's just ready to go away, and admittedly says that he can't see himself in another Giants uniform, which he told me in a conversation in early September as well. But, you know, the timing is right. Not everyone has this opportunity. Tim Lincecum has it. I mean, his equal, maybe his superior, obviously, because he has two Cy Young awards. But he went and pitched with the Angels and now hasn't officially retired or anything. But, you know, Brian Wilson, another Giant, who kind of went away and became a Dodger and had an argument with Larry Bear, and that didn't go over well. So it's fortunate for Cain that he's in this position, that everything is sort of working. I mean, it's not a must-win game. They're not in any kind of contention, obviously, except for the last pick in the draft.
So,
throw him a game Saturday. He'll start it. He obviously won't finish. He doesn't have that endurance to go even five or six innings. He might, maybe just on, you know, pure adrenaline. But at some point, Bochy's going to walk to the mound and they'll take the ball from Cain, and they'll shake hands. They might hug. They might shed a tear, and the infielders will come over with their hugs. And,
right.
You know, Cain will make that long walk for the last time from the mound to the dugout, and he'll take his sweet time, and he'll tip his cap, something he doesn't normally do. After really good games, he just kind of puts his head down, walks to the dugout, and shakes hands. But this time, there's going to be a little bit of emotion, and justifiably so. You know, it's going to be a love-in, and people are going to stand and clap, and they're going to cheer, and he's going to go to the dugout, and he's going to get a curtain call, and there'll be 1,000 hugs, and there'll be some tears, and it'll be a cool situation with nothing else at stake. Two teams going nowhere, the two worst teams in the division, Giants and Padres. It's an honor Lincecum didn't get, but maybe we'll get in the future.
Well, let's listen in to Wednesday when he spoke to the media in a heartfelt conversation. And this audio is courtesy of Kerry Crowley from KNBR.com.
I think that Saturday and this weekend will definitely be, my last time putting on a Major League Giants uniform. And I can't see myself going anywhere else to be able to play with another team. This organization has meant so much to me. It's meant so much to my family. It's something that's dear to my heart, and I'm just grateful that it's been a part of my life, and I've enjoyed it so much. I just felt like it was on my heart. I felt like it was in my mind, and try to weigh all the odds. The way that my body felt, the way that I knew that I needed to get prepared first season, the way that I know that it was the right time. And I think it feels as if now is the right time, and I want to be able to enjoy it. I want to be able to enjoy this last weekend and have fun with it.
John, I thought that was really heartfelt, as I said before. And when I think of Matt Cain, I think of really three things. One is the way he pitched in the postseason. I don't know if that's above the perfect game, but of course the perfect game is definitely at the top of the list. And the other thing about him is just early in his career, how he battled when he wasn't getting a lot of offensive support. He wasn't getting a lot of wins. In fact, Mike Kruko has sort of dubbed it being caned when you don't get a win, even though you pitched well. So those are kind of the things that I think about. I mean, Nick named him the horse for a reason.
There's a lot of things to remember. I asked Bumgarner what he would remember about Kane. Bumgarner said all his postseason games. It seemed every time he pitched, it was an elimination game.
Yeah.
And I asked Posey the same question. He said the perfect game. Of course, Posey caught the perfect game. Posey caught every pitch he threw in the postseason. He caught the all-star starts of Kane's. And you know he was Kane's guy, and whenever Kane, by the time Posey came around in 2010, I mean he caught every inning in the postseasons. So there's a lot of pretty deep relationships, especially with those two guys in the clubhouse, and obviously he was close to the relievers who have retired, including Lopez and Affelt, et cetera. But this isn't just Matt Cain, oh, he's injured, oh, he's got a bad ERA, oh, he's got a losing all-time record with the Giants. This is Matt Cain who, I mean, just a couple things you remember. I mean, here's a great stat. There's only, you know, four Giants in the history of the franchise during the San Francisco years who were in the majors at least 10 years and spent all of them as a Giant.
That's
and
amazing.
Kane is one of them.
That's amazing.
The other three are Jim Davenport and Robbie Thompson and Scott Gorelt. Yes, Scott Gorelt. And Kane. And that's it. I mean, all those guys out front with statues, they weren't Giants their whole career. And, you know, Barry Bonds wasn't, Bobby Bonds wasn't, Will Clark wasn't, Jack Clark wasn't. But Kane is. And it's, it's part result of the long contract and the fact that he was kind of untradeable because of the contract. Sure, but if you look at what he did over his career, some of the numbers are pretty ridiculous. I mean, he does rank in the all-time top 10 in starts. And I'm not talking San Francisco starts, but I'm talking New York Giants back when those guys made 40, 42 starts a year. So he's got 330 starts. That's sixth all-time. And he's fifth all-time in strikeouts going back to the New York days with 1,690. So, those are stats that, well, okay, who's got more starts than Kane? Who are the five guys? Well, they're all in the Hall of Fame. Christy Mathewson, Juan Marichal, Carl Hubble, Mickey Welch, Amos Roussey. So it's a pretty, I mean, Kane's not going to the Hall of Fame. But just to be mentioned with these guys is pretty spectacular. In fact, you know, all the guys most of those guys I mentioned are ahead of him in strikeouts. There's only one guy in from recent times who's on that list who has more strikeouts than Kane, and that's Lincecum, who has 14 more. Now, Kane is not going to strike out 14 guys on Saturday, so he's comfortably
<Probably not. laughs>
in his spot. All time in strikeouts, the postseason numbers were incredible. You know, zero ERA throughout 2010 and in 2012. Starting all the closeout games, it was pretty fantastic stuff. And obviously, he missed 2014 because of injuries. And you know, he was never really the same after 12. And you know, to his credit, he averaged 32 starts and 200 plus innings for the 5 or 6 years through 2012. So it's kind of one of those situations where he kind of gave his arm to the team.
He did, no doubt about that. And those names you mentioned, wow, this is amazing, you know, that he's in some great company. He accomplished a lot in his career. Now, I think back when you mentioned Lincecum, and I think back when Lincecum first joined the Giants, and, you know, I think it was 2007, and, you know, just this young kid and interviewing him. And I think back on Kane, too, when he first was coming up to the major leagues, and I was first starting out at SiriusXM, and I remember interviewing him, and I remember the first year or two how accessible he was. You know, he's just starting out. And then he becomes, you know, this bigger name, this bigger pitcher. And one time I tried to track him down for an interview, and then it looked like he was just going to blow me off. Like he was just running into the clubhouse. And I was like, wow, this guy's changed a couple of years in or whatever. And then he just slammed on the brakes and came back into the dugout and talked to me. And I thought, you know what? This guy gets it. Like, he's not going to forget where he came from. I don't think he ever did.
You're kind of a jokester. That is a team prankster in a lot of ways, but you don't really see it when the media are in there. You know, I remember Kane from you know, the early years. I mean, he came up in 05 as a 20-year-old kid. He celebrated his 21st birthday in the clubhouse late that season. And, I mean, this is when, you know, Jason Schmidt was still on the team. Reeder was going out. Kind of a comparison here, maybe a contrast, is, you know, Reeder was on his way out, Kane was on his way in. Reeder was real bitter when he left. He thought they were jacking him around and they wouldn't let him start, and he wanted, you know, they wanted to put him in the bullpen. He didn't want to go to the bullpen, and, you know, they released him shortly after the All-Star break. He popped off, he went home. You know, now he's out there and everybody celebrates him, but he did not have a real nice exit from the team. Of course, he had a real lousy year. He had a like a 6 ERA, you know, and it's, his name has come up this week because, you know, Matt Moore's ERA ballooned to the extent where it's the second worst through 30 games or 20 games, I guess, in Giants San Francisco history, and only Reeder's in 1999 was worse, something like that. I mean, so, you know, my point is, Kane was sent to the bullpen last September. He was sent to the bullpen two or three times this year. Each time, he said, fine, I'll do what it takes. Bochy wants me to go, I'll go. I mean, that's pretty classy stuff.
It is.
That other pitchers might not do, and or you know, let their ego accept something like that, or their contract accept something. You know, and here's Kane, who actually has helped a lot of these younger pitchers, even though they were in competition with him for the, you know, fourth or fifth job in the rotation. This goes back to spring training and last year. So, you know, commend him for that. And, a couple of things just going back to his early days. I do remember one time when Kane and Lincecum, and remember, Lincecum went to college, University of Washington, 3 years, so he got his education there. Kane came out of high school as a 17-year-old kid, you know, pitching in Hagerstown and Norwich and all these towns. It's kind of where these high school kids who get drafted get their education, in clubhouses and in little towns. And it's just a different way, different lifestyle, obviously, than the college life. And so you saw that some of those differences between Lincecum and Kane. But I remember one time they were both together. The Giants were celebrating their 50th anniversary in San Francisco at the Double Play Bar and Grill, you know, the one down there across from the old Field Stadium site.
Yeah.
And they were both there, they're kids, and they both knew they needed to talk in front of this big gathering. And, you know, I was sitting next to them, and they were kind of whispering to them, so what are we supposed to do? What are we doing here? What are we supposed to say? You know, it's funny, you know, how well accomplished they are in front of the media now, you know, later in their careers versus early on when they were kind of nervous just to speak to this gathering of media and officials and fans or whatever it was over at the Double Play. So they both grew up in this organization, and one's retiring in the organization. One didn't get a chance to do that because he was with the Angels. But now we're seeing something with Matt Kane that seems to be a happy ending, even though the last few years were really not good for him.
Yeah, I mean, he tried to reinvent himself. He's throwing the two-seam fastball. It just didn't work out. One other story that I remember from last season, he's taking batting practice, and I'm standing over there by the Giants dugout, sort of out towards the field a little bit, and he drilled me with a foul ball, you know, and he's a pitcher. I'm just not expecting that. Hit me right in the thigh. I was fine. At first, I was a little stunned, and he was looking over like, hey, are you okay? Are you okay? You could see he was concerned. Yeah. You know, I have to say that, you know, Kane is that kind of guy. Like, he just seems like, you know, a kind human being. He wasn't going to just, like, turn his head and go, oh, who cares? I just drilled one of those media guys, you know?
Yeah, and he became a San Franciscan too. I mean, here's a kid from the South, and you know, he's got married, children, and suddenly, you know, family man living in the city. And if you remember back in the Candlestick days, nobody lived in the city. They always lived down south somewhere, Foster City, wherever. And nowadays, these people. Who are with the team, it's just so much easier. And why not, right? If you're in your 20s, early 30s, you better live in the city. I mean, there's so much to do, so much cool things. Just walking to the park is a thing, you know, the Candlestick era, nobody was able to do. And so he's a city kid now. And he said he never would have imagined it. He's, you know, he tells stories about how he was kind of overwhelmed when he first came here. You know, he didn't know where to go, what to do with the city, you know, compared to his the town he grew up in. It was just too big, too noisy, too loud. And now he's a part of it. So he really accepted it and you know, vows to come back regularly.
We'll have more with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. You think about retiring in any profession and how difficult that is. And I want to play this cut of Mike Kruko. I really found it to be, you know, something that it really, you know, it got me, you know, just kind of tugged at my heart a little bit. And this is when back in August, early August, Mark Purdy had announced that he was retiring. And then this was his last game, Mark Purdy from the San Jose Mercury News, one of your fellow writers. And Mike Kruko, here's what he said on the Giants telecast.
And Sunday, Purdy's going to write his final article in his career. Yeah, I'm thinking, what is going on in his mind right now? Would you like to be sitting here doing your last broadcast? No. Yeah, I'd rather just drop dead at the microphone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Drop dead at the microphone. I mean, that's how serious Kruko is taking, you know, what he does for a living. And you think about it, you know, like Vin Scully, he didn't want to retire until he was way later on in years. So I can only imagine what goes on in somebody's mind when they take the mound like this, Matt Cain, for his final start, when you've been doing this your whole life and it means so much to you.
And you got to give credit to Bochy. It's kind of a tribute start. It's not a start that he, you know, had scheduled and wouldn't have made if he was going to come back next year or whatever, or was part of the plans of the future of the team. But, you know, he's done this with Zito. He's done it with Tim Hudson, you know, guys who helped him win rings. And certainly Kane is, you know, well on top of this list and deserves to make this start. So it's kind of a golden parachute moment in which he can just walk away on top, even though the numbers and the injuries, you know, weren't really in his favor over the last few years, from 13, 14, 15, and 16, and now 17. It's been several years, though 13 was a full season at least. And we just haven't seen that out of him, you know, because of the elbow and other issues. So it's going to be an emotional day, and I imagine it's going to be a big crowd and a lot of media, a lot of fans, and maybe some old friends who might say a word or two before or after or during that that he would want there. So it's well deserved, and for a team that might have the worst record in baseball when it's all done here, you know, sometimes they do it right with these reunions, with these ceremonies, with the appreciation for history.
More with John Shea in just a moment. Are you looking for a great place for dinner? Then you really need to try Terzo, an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. When you sit down at your table at Terzo, you will feel the warm and welcoming ambiance. They make you feel like you're at home with great service and a delicious meal. Serving dinner only, Terzo offers unique food drawn from the Mediterranean region. They change their menu daily based on the local availability of product. Open 7 days a week, Terzo suggests reservations, but they do have a bar area available for walk-ins. Check out their website, www.terzosf.com, for daily menus and hours. Drop by Terzo at 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco for an exceptional neighborhood dining experience and your private dining needs. Well, let's think ahead for the Giants for 2018. And who knows, maybe Matt Cain will be a part of the front office and can help out with these decisions. And you know, it's not going to be easy, John. We've talked about it a lot here the last month or two because the Giants have been out of it. Let's just kind of go over this roster a little bit and what you think the Giants need to do, because I think there are some people out there that think, oh, don't make too many changes. You know, if they're healthy, they're going to be fine. I'm not one of those people. I just think that if you end up losing 100 games or close to it, and you're the worst team in baseball or one of the worst, that you got to make some changes. And I don't know how drastic it has to be, but when you heard Brian Sabian talking about the defense being atrocious, I really think he was talking about the outfield. He was talking about Denard Span and Hunter Pence. And I know those guys are under contract. I just don't think they should be regular, starting with the outfield. I'm not saying, you know, you just eat their contracts, but I think you got to figure out a way to get some younger players into that outfield, and it may not be you know, what you have in your minor league system. I don't know how good Chris Shaw is. I don't know what you do as far as signing free agents, but just based on what you've seen this year, John, what do you do in the outfield?
Well, two things you got to know is Span and Pence are still signed through next season.
Right.
And very expensive contracts. So if both of those guys play, no matter who you have in center field, and the plan is to move Span to left, no matter who you have in center field, it's not going to be an average or an above average defensive outfield.
No.
As the naked eye could see this season, Pence hasn't been the same and Span hasn't been the same. Now, some Giants fans have not seen the best of Span. He was quite good early in his career defensively.
Oh, yeah, and he stole bases, you know, too. He doesn't do that anymore.
Sure. He does is hit home runs, right? No.
He's got 12.
He's gotten on base. He's done some things. When healthy, he's good. But He hasn't been able to track the ball or run to the gaps as he did earlier in his career. But they signed him as the center fielder, and that's who they have out there the past 2 years. So he'll be in year three next year. Bochy wants to move him to left field in spring training like he did with Pagan a couple years ago. But is Span going to be your everyday left fielder? Is Pence going to be your everyday right fielder? Maybe they do some kind of semi-platoon, and they have the guy platooning with them alternate between left and right, depending on who's starting that day, and then they get Willie Mays to play center field. I don't know where Willie is in this free agent market or this trade market, but boy, do they need somebody who could track down a ball. Maybe he doesn't need to hit 30 home runs. Maybe they find some corner infielders to do that, and maybe Belt has a breakout year and he's healthy. But boy, they just need a guy, especially if Span and Pence are going to be in that outfield, to maneuver and make plays and cover ground, because they have not had that guy. And in that park with low scoring games, they need that guy. Who's it going to be? I'm not sure. I mean, if you look at the top free agents, there's really nobody who can play center field other than, say, you know, if you go to Kansas City and Lorenzo Cain. But, you know, he's going to be 32 in April, and that's kind of just like bringing Span here at the end of his career. Yeah, Cain is better, more power, everything, does everything better, but he's on the downside. In baseball, 32 is on the downside. So you don't want a center fielder on the downside. We've seen that, and that's not going to work. So I imagine if they don't have anyone in the farm system, they're going to have to trade for somebody or get some kind of middle-ranged free agent, because it's a need they've had. And I don't see anyone in AAA right now who is going to jump into that position.
Well, they had two center fielders, really, in San Jose this year that I think could handle the position defensively right now, and that's Brian Reynolds, who was the first pick in the draft in 2016, and Steven Duggar. Duggar was injured most of the year. I don't think either guy is ready to swing the bat at the major league level, though, so those guys are still a couple of years away.
And Duggar is a Bochy favorite. I think that, who knows, we might have seen him up here in this garbage time in the second half. Because of his defense and, you know, the desperation the team has to find somebody who could play the outfield, because none of these prospects have taken advantage of the situation at a time they really could. And so they need a defensive first outfielder, and they need a power hitting third baseman, because do you think Pablo Sandoval is coming back?
That's a good question. He's trying to come on strong at the end, but I don't think so. I don't think you bring him back.
I don't think so, because the defense is there fine, but you can find defense. You can't find power as easily. And the free agent market has a couple of them. You know, I mentioned Kane with Kansas City, Moustakas from Kansas City. What, 38 bombs this year? Free agent, third baseman, plus 28 years old, he's in his prime. He's a guy that, you know, overnight could turn this lineup into something special. Not the only piece, but one of the pieces. And Todd Frazier, another third baseman, lousy batting average this year. He's a free agent as well. So if you're looking at free agency, those are two options. And obviously they can get a corner outfielder. They can't find a center fielder, but who's going to be an elite free agent. But a corner outfielder, J.D. Martinez, bingo. We've seen what he's been doing in Arizona, and he's a free agent, and the Giants have had interest in him in the past, couldn't swing a deal, and maybe they'd have to overpay to get him, which they've done many times. Will he come here? I mean, he really likes Arizona, and the Diamondbacks want him back.
I mean, that would be a great pickup. But, yeah, like you said, Diamondbacks want him back. He loves hitting in that ballpark. I don't see it happening. What do you think as far as a drastic move? Because you've talked about Joe Panik, and, you know, a lot of teams definitely would be interested in him, and we've already covered that a lot. What's a drastic move here? I mean, you could eat Brandon Belt's contract. That's a lot to eat. Do you think the Giants will make some kind of a move here, or, you know, let somebody go, where, you know, you're just saying, you know, we need to make a major change here somehow?
Well, the most drastic is trade Bumgarner.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They're not going to trade Posey.
No.
But and Crawford, probably not. It's a big contract, and he had an off year offensively, though he's come on strong. You know, Bumgarner is, you know, signed. You know, eventually it's going to run out. Will they want him back at $40 million a year, which is what the top pitchers are going to be making? I don't know. We'll see. His value fell this year because he didn't pitch an entire season, and he did things that kind of ticked off the team. Fell off of a bike in Denver and missed a few months. That didn't go over well with the team or the season. But that would be the drastic one. You trade him, you get a center fielder, you get a third baseman power, you get a prospect. So that's a possibility. But it's probably far-fetched. More than likely, they're going to have to keep all these contracts, including Belt. You know, one option is to try to move Belt into left field and find a power-hitting first baseman, which is maybe easier to do. And, you know, that's a situation they'd have to consider. But, you know, maybe one of the more obvious moves is trading Joe Panik because of his contract. He's not getting paid much. He's under club control for a while. Great defender, very good number two hitter. Is always going to get on base, always going to hit for average. We've seen some tremendous plays by him this year. You want to break up that double play combination? Not so sure. But if it means, you know, retooling this team and making it a lot better, it's something they'll have to consider.
What about the pitching staff? I mean, the rotation looks like it's going to be set, you know, especially if Johnny Cueto doesn't opt out. And then, you know, a little battle there in spring training with Chris Stratton and Ty Block. And, you know, maybe Tyler Beede gets involved in that. But the bullpen, you could say it's a mess. I mean, Mark Melancon hopefully comes back from the surgery. Hopefully Will Smith is, you know, similar to what he was before, coming back from Tommy John surgery. You know, I'm not really sure what they do as far as the other short relievers. Sam Dyson at times was pretty good, you know, Wednesday notwithstanding. Kyle Crick showed something, you know, that he throws hard. But there's just a lot of question marks in there. The guy that maybe – two guys that, in my mind that stepped up the most would be Reyes Maranta, believe it or not. I mean, just because he throws hard, he's got a really a kind of a devastating slider. And Corey Guerin, I mean, he was pretty consistent all year. Other than that, a lot of question marks in my opinion. What do you think, John?
Well, Strickland is one guy who has value they could trade. He'll probably, you know, earn a pretty hefty paycheck next year, arbitration eligible. And, you know, maybe they weren't too keen on what happened in that Nationals game with Bryce Harper and the suspension and everything. And, you know, the reaction of the team, they didn't necessarily support him.
No.
So that's a situation. You know, he might be able to get something in some kind of trade, especially if you package him with Panik or somebody else. You know, hard-throwing righty who's been fairly consistent and healthy. But I think their main hope, and they've said this, is for Melancon to be healthy, for Dyson to do what he's been doing for the most part this year, and the Smith eventually come in as a late-inning lefty. But he's obviously not going to be 100%. On opening day, because it's just about a year removed from Tommy John surgery. Now, relievers recover quicker than starters because they only have to go an inning or two versus 6, 7, 8, 9. So, you know, we'll see how they restructure that bullpen because nobody has really shown over 6 months that they have earned a spot on the opening day roster, you know, beyond Dyson. And Melancon has to come back because of the contract. So Strickland, you know, obviously earned a spot, but whether he's going to get a spot is another matter.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again on Friday for part two of our conversation. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.